On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. On this installment, we hear from three great guests who attended AppliedNet 2025 in Las Vegas, a tech show attended by a whole bunch of fine folks from around the insurance industry. First up on this episode are Carrie Poindexter and Jonathan Sawmich from GEICO, who will tell us what they and the Gecko were doing in the exhibit hall at an independent agent conference. Next, we hear from InsurTech expert Mark Brading. Always great to catch up with Mark on the impact of AI on our industry. And finally, Brenna Johnson with EasyLinks. Brenna outlines how agents and CSRs are using AI for busy work and creating more time for hero work. Hero work is much more meaningful for customers. Here we go. Our guests today from GEICO are Carrie Poindexter in agency operations and Jonathan Sawmich in communications. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's and here, we happen to be here at the AppliedNet 2025 in Las Vegas with, I just found out this morning, it's 4,400. I've been saying 4,000. So it's 4,400 of our closest friends, right? Is it going well for you so far?
It's been so much fun. This is our first time at AppliedNet with GEICO. So it's been an awesome experience to see the energy, keynote speakers. They have so many sessions. And I think most importantly, to hear our agent feedback about what they're looking for in carriers and specifically how GEICO can help support them.
Yeah, no, it's been thrilling kind of all the way around. Just hearing that feedback firsthand from agents, what they need, how they're running their businesses, where they're at today and where we can help them is great for us to hear.
Yeah, it's one of the few shows that I go to anyway where there's like thousands of independent agents. I mean, there's some big conferences like the Risk Managers, there's 11,000 there, and SureTech Connect has a lot too, but these are primarily independent agents, and the people here are the ones who, like in agencies, write personal lines. They're the ones who do small commercial and personal lines, a lot of processors, CSRs, you know, obviously principals as well, but you're meeting, you know, it's cool because it's you're meeting with real people who are slugging it out every day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and you have a diversity too, because you're not just meeting with the people who are the producers writing business, which is what we see a lot when we go into agency office, but you're seeing people behind the desk, the tech people, the people in accounting that make the business run, and you're finding out what's important to them to be efficient and productive. And I don't know, that's always top of mind as you're thinking about your customers. So it's nice to understand the broader agency and what collectively they need to run a great shop.
Yeah. And it fits so nice with what we're trying to do in the space too, because, you know, initially when we were starting to think about how do we explore this channel? How do we help to meet the needs of more customers? How do we get access to those markets and help small independent agents grow their businesses? And it really came back to that ease of use. How do we make it easier for them to quote and service and sell their customers free insurance products?
Yeah, I mean, you're answering the question I was going to ask you, like why it's, you know, because, you guys have been, how long have you been with agents? A couple of years now? A year and a half or so?
Last year started kind of trying it out in some states and exploring pockets of agencies across the country. As you know, Peter, an agent in Florida has much different needs than an agent in North Dakota or an agent in Texas. And so it was important for us. Yeah, so we started last year around February, March timeframe, wrote our first policy, and we've expanded to, 40 plus states now with pockets of agencies and multiple products. We're doing auto, commercial auto, recreational lines, just launched umbrella in Ohio. So it's been a lot of fun to meet different agencies and try to understand their needs.
Yeah. And are they, so what's the reaction been? This is me talking, not you guys, but it's similar to Progressive where they have a big brand. There are some major brands who are advertising like you guys are on TV. So the brand has got to help, add to the agent's lineup of carriers and offerings they have, right? Just the GEICO brand is so well known.
It is, and it's so much easier for them to sell than some of those, you know, carriers that don't have as big of a name in a brand. Like when they show a GEICO quote that is really easy for them to get, they don't have to explain who's GEICO. Are they going to pay my claims? Is this a good company? Is this a good carrier? So, I mean, that makes a lot of difference in the agent's office. They can, you know, sell two policies in the time they could, one with something else where they have to explain and get into all those details. So it's a big win all the way around for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's great for independent agents too, because the bigger the pie, the more policies they can sell. And when you have national brands in the IA channel, it just makes more customers want to shop there. We know customers want to be with independent agents. You know this, Peter. Mm-hmm. When you look at the data and you look at the trends, independent agents is one of the few that's growing, yeah. which is really cool. And so we want to keep that trajectory up. So by entering the channel, I think we introduce another national carrier that those agents can say, this is another reason to come to us versus going to a captive carrier, for example.
Yeah. And you mentioned the different products. How many states are you all across the country?
Yeah, 40 plus. Well, West Coast,
with agents. With agents, I mean.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, 40 plus states with independent agents.
40 plus. Okay, mm-hmm. great. I saw you have a booth. There's a lot of activity there. There's the geckos there as well. That's quite a character.
When we bring the gecko, everybody just kind of comes in droves. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Taking pictures with a gecko. We've got a car that you know we sit behind and got a great big map in the booth. So we're actually having people pin where they're at in the United States. And
oh, that's cool.
Where we can. So we're seeing this great you know countrywide footprint of support and needs kind of support.
Yeah, it's funny how popular the gecko's been. People are like literally running across the thing and they're like, where are the gecko here? Like, how long's the show? I'm like, don't worry. The gecko's going to be here the entire trade show. So that's been a lot of fun to see the energy. And we worked with our marketing team and put together, I think, a nice Las Vegas themed backdrop. So we wanted to make a splash. You know, we wanted to show that we're here and we're listening and we really wanted to have a presence. And I think we've been able to accomplish that.
Yeah, something... So what do you call the gecko? Is it an it? Is it a she? Is it a he? What do you say?
It's the gecko, what we call it.
It's a gecko, okay.
Capitalized.
Where does the gecko find the time? Because I when my kids were little, I coached soccer. We went to soccer tournaments, and there was the geckos walking around, you know, at this festival. And I remember I was trying to tell the kids something about getting ready for the second half, and they just ran over to hug the gecko, you know.
That's so
awesome. These were 11-year-old kids hugging the lizard.
It's so funny you say that. I was doing an event in my daughter's school about like what your parent does for work. And so I was like, no one's going to find insurance interesting. So we have gecko plushies. I'm like, I'm just going to bring some plushies. Let me tell you what, I might have been the least interesting topic, but I was the favorite speaker because now every kid in eighth grade at St. Michael the Archangel has a gecko. So it's kind of fun.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So do you have a place on your website where agents can get more details or...
Yeah, no, we sure do. So geico.com/agency is our
agency
page. Yes, geico.com/agency. Okay. They can go out there, and there's a video actually with Carrie in there that's going to tell you a little bit more about our program, the value proposition, what we're trying to do in the channel. And there's actually an option to go ahead and apply for an appointment right there on the page, too.
Okay. Well, great, guys. I hope you have a good show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Welcome, Mark. Thanks for being here, bud.
Glad to be here. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, I was mentioning that we are at AppliedNet 2025 here in Las Vegas with 4,000 of our closest friends. And it's a good event. You and I are always here. We always catch up. And I think I just thought it'd be fun if we had a chat for the podcast and catch up on what you're doing. You're doing some new things. And you've been around the industry a while. I want to talk about AI with you and your assessment of where we are with InsurTechs also. But maybe why don't we start a little bit at the beginning, how you got involved with, you now at Resource Pro, how your career got to where it is. Cause everybody's got an interesting insurance story for me, I notice.
Yeah. There's the odd person that, you know, grew up in an insurance agency and always wanted to be in insurance, but most of us had a different trajectory. Right. So I actually started the very technical career. I was debugging mainframe operating systems and installing, you know, different software. And then after a few years of that, I was hired by IBM. And, you know, typical IBM, I lived downtown Chicago. I had no car. And they said, oh, don't worry, we'll put you on the CNA account. And the first day there, they said, you're going to be in the Allstate account. So you got to go up to Northbrook every day. So I did that for 10 years. I spent 10 years with an office at Allstate. They were my client. You know, great time. And then ended up 25 years with IBM, and it was all in insurance.
Was it an independent agent, or were you in the captive side, or?
It was really across their whole distribution. You know, at first I was working a lot with their data center folks, but then I ended up getting into the strategy side of things. And then with IBM, the last 15 years I spent were global roles. And so I worked with every type of insurance entity around the world in every major market in the world. So, you know, that was a blessing to be able to get that experience and to do that travel. But it was mostly strategy work at that time. And then after I left IBM, or after IBM left me, I should say, I was part of a startup, Strategy Meets Action. We were a research and advisory firm and went 10 years building our business, working with lots of clients across the ecosystem in just North America. And then ResourcePro acquired us at the very end of 2020. So it's been about 5 years that I've been part of ResourcePro. Still with the same mission of being a thought leader, doing industry research, advising carriers, MGAs, brokers, wholesalers, the whole ecosystem.
Yeah. So you like the strategic view, huh?
I do. Yeah. I'm a futurist, more or less. I like to think of the future, but you know, one of the reasons we were Strategy Meets Action is that you can think about the future and blue sky it, but you always want to bring that back to what's practical. You know, what should I do today in my near term, in my short term strategies? Yeah. Given the thinking about the future.
Yeah. You think the insurance industry is good at strategy in general?
I think the insurance industry tends to be very tactical.
Yeah.
Tends to be quarter to quarter, you know, oriented. And even though like a good part of the industry on the carrier side is mutuals, they're still like quarter to quarter focused. Mm-hmm. And I don't run into a lot of brokers or carriers that are doing sophisticated 3 to 5 year type, you know, strategies or horizon 1, 2, 3. Now, some of them do. I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush, but you know, a lot of them are really, you know, 1, 2 year strategies and then kind of roll it from there. And I guess I would say in this day and age with things moving so fast, maybe that's not a bad thing, you know, to just keep kind of rolling with your strategy because things are changing fast.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta have some kind of consistency, right? So you obviously been around long enough to see the onset of the insurtechs, the original insurtechs, who, if I recall, and this is not you talking, this is me, my impression was that they were going to come in and just get rid of agents and brokers. It's a huge layer in the middle that's all fat. We can save all the commission, and we're going to put them out of business. We're going to be a online. Well, first they were going to be an online carrier. Then they realized how expensive and hard that is with regulation, et cetera, et cetera. Then they were going to be an online MGA, or direct to consumer. There's all these dreams. And I think they had a pivot pretty seriously, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. I mean, and this story repeats itself because if I go back to the early to mid 90s when the internet came on the scene and I was advising companies what that was and they should have a website and all these things, you know, the big word then was disintermediation. Yeah. Oh, this is gonna kill the agents and brokers. Everybody's gonna go direct.
Right.
And even then I was saying, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to about, I date InsurTech at about 2010. That's when it really started, around 2010 timeframe. And you're right, a lot of focus on direct distribution in the early days, right? Whether you're talking about a startup carrier, or whatever, right? You're talking mm-hmm. about a comparative rater, something like that. It was all about like, we're going to disintermediate the agent broker. We don't really need them. We can do all this right directly. But they, you know, so many of the insurtechs that I ran into in the early days, like the story went like this. You know, I really don't know much about insurance, but like I got this tech platform and right. That was really the story. And I kept telling them, you know, insurance is a pretty complex business. You're going to learn that. And they'd come back to me 6 months later and say, oh gosh, the regulations, the complexity, all these lines of business, every state, you know, DOI, all this, right? So they learned, right? They learned. I mean, there's still some of them out there that are talking about disruption, right? But there's not many of them. Most of them have evolved to the point where they're partnering with the industry in various ways, right?
And vice versa.
Yeah. Right? Vice versa.
Because the carriers needed some help too, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody in the ecosystem needed some help. You know, agents, MGAs, carriers, you know, they've all arrived at the point where they realize that these insurtechs are bringing new ideas, new solutions. They're worth, you know, testing out, being a partner, right? You know, you have to work through the hype and who's real and who isn't real. But they have been a catalyst for change for the industry as a whole. So I think it's ultimately a good thing.
Yeah. From what you've seen and read, like since 2010, do you have any sense of how many insurtechs like are still around from some of the original days? Like 1 out of 10, 1 out of 100, you know, I've always wanted to know, like, what do you think?
I would say
so much investment money went in, Mark, like so much money came in.
I would say it's something like 2 out of 10, right?
Okay.
And at one point we were trying to track every single insurtech, and we had a spreadsheet of, you know, 1500 or 2000 at one point, I think. And there's not that many around these days in the US market or the North American market, but there's still a lot of them.
Okay.
And I think there have been a lot in the MGA space that have been, a lot of startup MGAs that have been, I think, pretty successful. They're still around.
Okay.
Maybe a higher percentage of those have been successful. As you know, on the carrier side, there's actually only been a small number who have decided they want to be a full stack carrier and go after the, you know, the funding needed, you know, to have the right capacity there and deal with all the regulations. So there's really only a small number of those. They get a lot of press, but there's not hundreds. There's, you know, a couple of dozen, maybe.
Yeah, right.
And most of them are still around, mixed success. You know, they're obviously startup digital agencies, you know, a fair number of those out of the marketplace, many of which have been successful. It's the tech companies, I think, that, you know, maybe only 1 out of 10 tech companies, because those are the ones, many of them, that came into the market and said, this is going to be easy. This is like shooting fish in a barrel, right? Because, you know, insurance is so inefficient and all these, you know, all this paper and all these workflows, and it's not that easy.
So those are the companies that, like, could, I guess an analogy might be, they're like the plumbers. They're working behind the scenes on, like, a claims process or something, right? They're not facing the world. It's more inside stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And now, of course, with the advent of AI, there's a lot of very visible insurtech players out there that are bringing solutions to agents and to carriers and MGAs. And so I think there's a lot of good activity going on. You have to, again, sort through the hype, right? What's real? Does it work for me?
Right.
But I think, again, we're in a new wave of these insurtechs being catalysts for change in our industry.
Yeah. So what's exciting? What's going on now that excites you about this whole phenomenon called insurtech, or just tech and insurance?
Yeah, I think it's beyond insurtech. I believe that insurtech has kind of been absorbed into the fabric. And yes, there's still new entities being launched, but it's just part of the normal operations, right? These new startups. So here's the way I look at it. I think we're obviously in the AI era, right? Let's say starting around 2010, I call it the digital era, like a lot of activity for digital transformation across the whole ecosystem. We're in the AI era now, a lot of activity there to really understand how can we leverage all this data we have, not just for automation, but to give us some new insights to serve, you know, our policyholders better. And I'm looking to the next era, which I call the connected world era, right? Because the concept of the Internet of Things and all these connected devices and, you know, autonomous vehicles, those have been in play for a while and developing, but haven't really had a huge impact on the industry, let's say, right?
Yeah.
In certain sectors, yes. But, you know, I think the next era is going to be about marrying all of the data coming from those real-time connected devices that relate to everything that we as an industry insure, marrying that with AI, right? Yes. And moving to more real-time management of risk. So that's what excites me. I think the future for the industry is bright. You've got that phenomenon, then you've got these new business models that are emerging, you know, with embedded insurance and parametric insurance and more on-demand type insurance things. And so I think a lot of those are serving to enlarge in the pie, right? There's so many risks in the world that are not covered or that there's gaps, and we just haven't been able to as an industry because it's not economically feasible. We're getting there with the technology and some of these new models where we can offer coverage on a lot of things that we didn't in the past. And so I think the future for the industry is very bright.
Yeah. And maybe not even just offer coverage, or in addition to that, is preventing losses in the first place, which is good for everyone. So that's where the risk management and loss control gets even more sophisticated, perhaps, with AI, some of these new tools?
Oh, absolutely. You think about the history of the industry, and you know, we've always been one that looks back, right? Looks backward at loss experience, and based on that, we develop our products. We, you know, understand how to underwrite and price those, and then we sell a policy, and then 6 months later or 12 months later, we look at it again, and we say, yeah, we're gonna have to adjust the price a little bit. Maybe we change a few things. So that's the historical kind of view, right? Of a reactive view. Oh, we have a claim. Now we have to handle the claim. We're now in an era where we truly can become more proactive and partner with customers to manage risk real time. So I think the whole discipline of loss control engineering is gonna just explode with AI, right? Because they've got all this new insight coming from, you know, the real time data, right? They've got this ability to partner with customers to, like you say, to avoid, you know, accidents and incidents in the first place. So to me, it's pretty exciting because it's a win-win for everybody in the equation if we can get there. Now, it's kind of this long arc of transformation where it's not going to happen overnight, but a lot of exciting potential.
Okay. So if you were to put on your futurist hat, what would you... How do you see this? Because AI, it just seems exponential more than computers. You know, 1982 was the December 82 Time magazine, and a computer on the cover. The man of the year was a computer, and you know, and if you remember, Microsoft said we're going to have a computer every home and office. People are like, what the heck? Why would we need a computer at home? And then all these things that happened. Email was around 91, 92, and commercially available everywhere. And then we had the .com thing, the internet. And now, you know, there's other iterations too, cell phones, mobile, social. AI just seems like a hockey stick of change. And this is me talking out. I have a feeling that if you're just like an average insurance carrier with average products, there's like 2,200 insurance carriers in the US, P&C, that are rated by AM Best Company. I just don't see them making it, Mark. This is me, not you. Unless they do something different, which, you know, I don't know what would force that, competitive forces, but also maybe new leadership, Gen Z, maybe millennial kind of this fresh round of leaders. Like, what do you say to people stepping into leadership roles now and running these companies? Like, what can you say to them other than fasten your seatbelts and start learning? I mean, who knows?
First of all, I'm not predicting some kind of M&A wave for carriers. I think it's just like banking and other industries have had that happen and these mega banks. I don't think that's gonna happen. If it was gonna happen, it would have happened a long time ago. I just believe that the M&A process and trying to absorb a smaller carrier into a larger carrier with all the systems, it's not worth it. You don't get the ROI. And besides that, there's still great value in these mutuals, right? That have their membership, their members, their geographic space, their area. So I'm not saying there's not going to be M&A, but I don't think there's going to be a big wave of it. There is going to continue to be M&A on the distribution side of things for sure, right?
Okay. Yeah.
For scale there. But back to your question, I actually think the key for the industry is something we call digital readiness. So while it's exciting to think about AI and the Internet of Things and all the things we just talked about, most organizations in the industry need to work on digital readiness. And by that, I mean, there's a lot of process optimization, you know, data management, systems modernization, things that have to happen to set the platform, to get the infrastructure to really capitalize on these things. And I'm not saying you stop and you don't look at AI or you don't experiment with IoT solutions or you don't do embedded insurance. You have to continue to do those things, but in order to really be successful as an industry, every entity needs to up their game with this digital readiness idea. So that's what we advise a lot of folks is like, don't get caught up in all the shiny objects and all the exciting stuff and go focus there, right? You got to make sure that your foundation is set well first, right? Because it's the same old story. Like you don't want to build a workflow or unleash AI on these inefficient processes, you know, that you've been doing it the same way for 50 years. So,
yeah. Well, last question, maybe a soliloquy. I think this is the time where we need more transformational leadership thinking in our industry, as opposed to transactional, which, you know, is more of the traditional underwriter actuary hat, and it's what's required to run insurance company so you don't go bankrupt. You know, I get all the math part of that, but the transformational thinking is where you look at AI and say, this is cool. We need to have more leaders in our company because I'm not the guy to do this. So just thinking about leadership, bringing in some fresh leadership might be one way. If you're not the one to do it in a C-suite, bring in people who can. It may be consultants, but it also could be new staff.
Yeah, and I think there is an evolution of leadership and a turnover of leadership. And I think there is there's a clear recognition that the future is AI and the future is, you know, optimizing your data, leveraging all these technologies for sure. I do find that there's not a lot of, you know, the large brokers or the carriers that have an aggressive strategy. I think they're all still at earlier stages figuring out, how do we get this foundation set? How do we really know where to invest in AI and what the best use cases are going to be and what our governance model is? So there's a lot of that work going on, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I hope that it kind of positions us in the next couple of years to start to really have a different trajectory. And part of that will be the leadership turnover that you talked about. I think that's going to happen naturally.
Yeah. Well, Mark, hope you enjoy the conference here. Good to see you, and best of luck to you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you having me.
Yep. Hello, Brenna.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for being here. We have to go a little bit into your background before we get into all the fun stuff with AI. And for those listeners out there, we are broadcasting semi-live from AppliedNet 2025 here in Las Vegas, 4,000 of our closest friends, right, Brenna?
Yep, it's great to see everybody in person.
You know, it really is, because I find that we're on Zoom all the time. And I know some people go to the office. You go to an office, I go to a small office. But there's nothing like this event. It's almost like this tribal feeling. Don't you feel that when you come to this?
Yep, you can really tell just the connection and community that the agencies are able to build, especially over years of being able to come to the event, interact with their peers, interact with the teams that are building their software. It's really special.
You know, and I know there's all kinds of people here from all around the industry, a lot of carriers, of course, a lot of agents, a lot of principals, but the rank and file attendees, these are the people who are slugging it out every day, right? They're in their offices. So I applaud their bosses for allowing them to be here, because they're like with their peeps, you know. You can see them. They're hugging each other. They get real excited about all the enhancements that you guys roll out every year and all, of course, the entertainment. But it's really just on a pure, I'm struck by on a pure human level how they just seem to really enjoy being here, you know.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that it's a place where people are building relationships and connections with other people that understand, you know, the pain of what they're going through day in and day out.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about you and the company. Where are you from originally, Brenna?
So originally, born in Oklahoma. We can go all the way back.
Oh, wow.
We moved around a lot. My dad was in the Air Force. And okay. So I just grew up with a love of meeting people and seeing new places. Yeah. But ultimately, I ended up in the DFW area.
Okay.
And that's where I did school. That's where I kind of started everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where Dallas Air is, where Easy Links is, right?
It is where Easy Links is, and it's very much how I, shall we say, fell into insurance.
Yeah. How did that happen? Because everybody does say that happens that way. I know I did.
It really does. So I was very focused on educating people, and so I had my MBA. I was working to educate people about communication in business settings. And just how to run their businesses better. And then ultimately decided that I wanted to, that was in education, decided I wanted to get out of education and go into private sector. And so I ended up finding Easy Links and just really fell in love with the independent insurance agency channel. The fact that it is just hundreds of, thousands of businesses that are running every day, supporting their communities, yeah. providing services, providing for their families, like just being a part of that is just always been really cool to me.
Yeah. It's a real slice of Americana, isn't it? They're very, it's addicting.
Yes.
The whole concept of helping people, where the rubber meets the road of all the things that insurance companies produce, all the things that tech firms, products and services they have, but the rubber meets the road is where the agents are every day. So I can totally see. So like, what was your first impression of insurance? Like what did you pick it? Like answering an ad or like how?
Well, I actually had a friend who was working for Easy Links.
Okay.
And he convinced me that I needed to come interview and I needed to be there. And I had a very long, very intense, multiple-hour interview with Brady Polansky, who is just a legend kind of in the insurance industry space.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it was, so getting that job, being able to start solving problems, and just I spent hours with agencies mm-hmm. to understand what they were doing. The specific problem that I was focused on at the time was just understanding the retention process and the renewal processes in agencies. And we were working on what ultimately became our patent for our product that we built, Retention Center.
Okay.
But just understanding what is the best way to be able to run that process to ultimately increase the overall value of retention, because it's so much more profitable to just keep what you already own. And so I was just passionate about understanding what people were doing, how they could do it better, and then ultimately how the technology could support them to do that. And I think one of the things that I truly was a defining moment that I just fell in love with it was we had been working really closely with an agency for many, many months, several agencies, but this one in particular, we'd been working with them for several months.
Mm-hmm.
We had been asking them to do this very arduous process manually, and we finally had completed the software to be able to help automate that and facilitate that process. And going through it with them for the first time and getting to hear the people that had seen their retention, agency retention, PIF retention increase. And so they were already excited about that part of it. But just to like hear the excitement when they were finally able to realize that they had technology that could help them do this rather than like the hours and hours of manual work that they had been doing before was just like this light bulb moment for me of how software can truly transform a business.
That's cool.
And so these hours of just like hard work that these agencies had been pouring in to be able to support their clients, like to be able to take some of the burden of that off of them through technology was this just really powerful moment for me.
Yeah. And retention, somebody told me, might have been a company person, that nobody's making any money in the insurance industry until the third year. So it kind of makes sense when you think about all the upfront work it takes to bring somebody on board, both by the agency and then the company. I know it's getting easier with technology and the workflows, but still. So you think of a lot of front work. And so it kind of makes sense that you want to hold on to customers as long as you can, and then also sell them more stuff, right? So all the software designed to do that as well. But it's not a nice to have. I mean, agencies who have high retention and make, and it gets to the point where you see, like, even a 1% or 2% difference can mean a big deal at the end of the day in terms of your profitability and also your agency valuation if you're going through a merger.
Yeah, it has huge impact on valuation and profitability. It's also something that for many, many years, a lot of agencies were so focused on selling and the market was really good and it was easy to sell and place business that it just didn't have quite the same focus that we've seen in the last couple of years. We've really seen that shift pretty dramatically in the last couple of years of just people being focused on their retention. And so it's been amazing when our agencies come to us to be able to say, hey, we actually have something that does support you. And we invested tons of time, money, resources into making sure this could be beneficial for your agency even before, you know, the market changed and it was so important.
Okay. So in the history of EasyLinks, you guys were, when I understand, a personal lines comparative rater. Maybe that's when you joined them, you were just doing that. You weren't owned by Applied. So can you walk us through how the company's evolved in terms of what it offers people?
Yeah, great question. So we've, EasyLinks as a whole, so the founder was always very focused with productivity. How do we get agencies to be able to work smarter, not harder? How do we have technology that supports and saves time for agencies to give them back time to be a trusted advisor? It's what this channel is known for. It's what they do the best, to be able to build those relationships with their clients, offer choice, and spend time with them. So that's exactly kind of what our rating foundation was, taking a very time-consuming manual process and making it more efficient through the use of technology. About 2012, our founder decided, Nag Rao decided, that we were going to go into management systems. One of the things that he had observed is that he didn't feel like all of the management systems were truly taking advantage of the technology to help make agencies more productive. The idea being that often agency management systems were looked at as a filing cabinet of just what had already happened, where technology can be really supportive in helping drive efficiency and processes, as well as helping you know how to prioritize and focus your time. And so that was kind of why he eventually decided to build a management system. And so with that, we began to really realize that there's a whole series of capabilities that agencies needed that we've really focused and added over time. We do this through working really closely with our agencies. We have a tremendous number of agencies that we do interviews with. We visit in office that provide us information and guidance and really help provide direction for where we go and how we invest our engineering resources.
Yeah. So how does it, so Applied bought EasyLinks, what is the sweet spot for you guys in terms of the size of agency, say?
Yeah, so we focus primarily kind of on the SMB space, so small and mid-size insurance businesses. And particularly where we find that we do the best is ones with a really focus on kind of hyper growth.
Okay.
So we have a lot of tools that help automate. Like I said, the entire focus is to try to help give you time back in your day so you can manage more without just adding that next headcount, because especially in kind of the small and mid-size agency base, that's like a really big decision to hire another employee.
Yeah, so these are like, and this is not Brenda saying this, this is me. It feels like that kind of agency, I've seen them, they're more aggressive on the sales side. They do things more online. They might be younger. They might skew a little bit younger. Not all of them, but I feel like there's a new, like a renaissance of newer agents, because there's a lot of agents being formed all the time. They're coming out of all these mergers that are going, there's a lot of disruption in the industry. They don't like the new, again, this is me talking, not you, but they don't like the new regimes, like, oh, I could do my own thing. I just want to sell. and like I don't want to handle the back office stuff. So I can kind of see that profile really working for EasyLinks.
Yeah, we have quite a few of those that choose to come over because they're interested in the tools that really support them, not just track what they're doing.
So you went from being a personal and comparative rater, now you're in a personal and commercial as well, or no?
Yes.
Personal and commercial, and it's all these other benefits, including the management system. What are some new things that are coming out that you can speak to around, like how are you using AI, for example?
Yeah, AI specifically is an incredibly powerful technology.
It's a little scary to me, as a consumer, but it's exciting.
Fair. That's a great point. So there is a portion. So we do a voice of the customer survey every year. We've been doing it for a very long time. Goes back to 2009. And when we ask about things like AI, or even when we don't ask, we have a comment section and we get told. There's groups that say, of our customer base, that say we're not moving fast enough because we're being really thoughtful and cautious about how we're implementing AI. And then there's other groups that are nervous about what it means for them and their business. Yeah. The way that we think about AI is very much as a way to multiply the human impact. So AI should never replace humans. It should support and assist them to be able to spend their time on what we call the hero work, and let technology do things that is just not the best use of time. So for example, one of the things that we observed in the last year and kind of one of our first entrances into using AI in our product was we noticed that in EasyLinks, and when we would be doing on-site observations with some of our customers, they would get a call from someone. They would immediately go into EasyLinks and start to look for, to make sure they could understand the background. So they're having this banter, you know, a little bit of banter with the customer, but they're like frantically clicking through and trying to look at all the activities and who was talking to them about what and just get caught up on the account. And we realized, so on average, what we were seeing is that was taking them about 3 minutes, which when you're on the phone with a customer or when you're trying to accomplish something, like 3 minutes doesn't sound that long.
It's an eternity.
But it is actually an eternity. Yeah. And it feels like forever. And so we realized that we could dramatically reduce that by letting AI, we have a new functionality called Catch Me Up. And what it does is it summarizes the activities and communication from that account and gives you a quick, concise summary so that you're able to provide personalized, omni-channel experiences for your customers without having to dig through your system and all that back and forth. So it's something that's so simple, non-obtrusive. It's there to support you if you need it. But what we're hearing from our agencies is that it's really powerful in helping give them that time back so that they can quickly service that customer and provide excellent, excellent touch points.
Yeah. So is that the EasyLinks virtual assistant that I read about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that is through our EVA line. So EVA is EasyLinks virtual assistant. And basically we like to just think of her as your intelligent teammate that never sleeps, always has your back, is right there if you need her. Because we want everyone, so think every producer, CSR owner, supported by this tireless teammate that's always there for you whenever you need her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed a lot of companies have names for their AI. I think it's kind of a way to kind of humanize and not be so scary, you know?
Yeah.
I'm your friend, I'm your buddy. What are you guys going to be rolling out here at the conference? What else are you talking about?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're actually very excited about is, so of course the industry has just gone through a hard market, some of that softening and getting a little bit better. Yeah. But what we've seen through that is many of our agencies that were really heavy personal lines players are diversifying their book. And they're starting to write a lot more small and mid-sized commercial business and growing rapidly in that space.
Yeah.
And we hear that from a lot of agents. Some agents are predicting that it'll be 30 to 40% of their book by like 2027. Okay. And so what we have done is we have completely rebuilt our entire application and submission process to be able to support agents into this. And so what that entails is this kind of reimagining of what building a commercial application should be. So in many systems, right up front, you're going to make a fork in the road. Do I decide to try to roll the dice and do a commercial, real-time commercial rating and hope it works, and then potentially have to pivot back to generating my manual chord forms to be able to send to my carriers? Well, in our reimagined flow, there is a single flow for that. And so you go through the process of like you are going to do a manual application. And then if a rate is available, we get that for you as kind of like a speed pass.
Okay.
And so it's really, really powerful for the agencies that have started using it and those that are giving us feedback on it, because they're not context switching, they're not pivoting, they're not re-entering data. It's a single flow for your commercial placement that kind of guides you through that, that there's no dead ends in that. So even if you're getting a declination through rating, you're still right there. You hit the button and you generate your accord forms and you're off to go.
Yeah. No, I know a lot of agents who are in heavy in personal lines, which by the way is done really, like personal lines used to be this thing, well, oh, it's too much trouble, not enough premium, et cetera, but there's so much premium personal lines. It's like half the entire PNC world anyway. And car insurance alone, I think, is a third of the entire, including commercial PNC world. So, you know, it's so worth it. But in research I've seen, the small commercial lines customer is very similar to the personal lines customer, isn't it?
Yes, we see a lot of similarities, and it's a really great place, particularly for agencies that are newer to writing commercial, to be able to start. The other thing too is so many of the customers that they already have happen to own businesses.
Yeah.
Is what we're seeing. And so if you just start having that conversation with the customers you already have, it naturally provides this kind of window into how do you start collecting and building your personal and commercial book. So you're looking for opportunities to delight your customers. Yeah. By providing services that they need and they may not have realized you could offer.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you a couple of fun questions. You got an MBA. What did you say you got an MBA in? Organizational health?
Strategic business management.
Strategic business management.
And then okay. I specifically focused on conflict in business. So.
Is that right? Is there conflict in insurance?
There is conflict in anything that humans are passionate about.
Yeah, that's for sure. So you had this journey of travel and, you know, you got your degree and you jumped in insurance. I know Brady Plansky very well, too. I've known him for decades. So that's kind of a small world moment for us, I guess. But what Are you going to hang on insurance? Is there any another career like you hope to do one day? Not to get you in trouble with EasyLinks, but everybody can dream, right?
I am incredibly passionate about helping the businesses that we're helping. So I think that if I ever wasn't specifically doing this and wasn't on the technology side, I would probably be in some kind of business consulting.
Yeah.
Because I'm
you're doing that now in a way.
I'm just excited about helping agency owners succeed and grow. Yeah. And like we talked about at the beginning, it's just
they're really good people.
Good people and such an important foundation for the economy of our country, for how they're contributing to their communities, and it's just amazing to get to be a part of that and support that.
So as you have been with EasyLinks for a while now, been in the business world, any advice you'd give your younger self?
Really just say yes to the opportunities that come along. I think that, you know, I didn't set out to go into insurance, but it's definitely an industry that I've fallen in love with and I'm passionate about, and passionate about the people and the problems that they're solving. And if you close yourself off to opportunities, then you may not find what you truly love.
Yeah, because it can be scary, right?
That change. Yes.
And saying yes can be scary.
Yes, it really can be.
And I think that's good advice, even if you're not taking on joining a new organization, even within your organization, try some new things, try some new roles, experiment, right?
Yep. And just understand what is out there and what people are doing, which, you know, ask good questions, be curious. It's amazing what people will tell you if you just are willing to ask and listen.
Yeah. So any advice that you've gotten over the years, like, is there a mantra in your brain when you think about some kind of guiding principle that you could share?
I think it might be that I had several different people throughout my career that just have told me, you know, don't be afraid to ask what might be the dumb question, because somebody needs to ask it and it opens the door for a conversation. And so just the more questions that you ask, the more you actually end up learning.
Yeah, being curious. I think of human nature, sometimes you feel like you're coming from a position of weakness if you ask somebody questions.
Yeah, I think often people can be afraid to ask questions because they think that it makes them look ignorant.
Yeah.
And I think at times people have a fear of being judged for being ignorant or not knowing something. But often you learn more, you get more richer experiences if you're willing to just
use
ask
your
the question.
Be curious.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Brenna, thanks. I hope you have a great conference. It's a good organization. We're with our peeps here, so it's great. So thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation.
You bet.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.